The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
So already our second day of practice. As we enter more deeply into this coming and going Sesshin, of course these ideas of first day, second day, third day, begin to lose some of their precision. We may think we know what a day is, we may think we know what a minute is, but as we enter more deeply into life itself, into your very own life, we can begin to see that we live actually in the middle of this immeasurable life. This morning in sutra service we read the field of boundless emptiness, one of the short pieces by Hongzhe. And he says, the field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. We might say the field of boundless potential, the field of suchness. The truth is that we live in the middle of this great mystery, coming and going. All of us appearing and disappearing in our many guises. We have a small logistical situation that one of us appeared earlier this morning in the form of the one who has stepped in dog poop. This may be you, may be me. One of our Sangha members cleaned the front steps, but there is a pair of shoes now outside the mudroom. After this talk, you may go check to see if you are the bodhisattva who has stepped in dog poop and clean your shoes off. We have some rubber gloves we can give you. all of us appearing in our many guises, coming and going. Now the one that looks quite good, and then the next moment we step in dog poop and we're all stinky and we still think we're doing quite well. And people begin to look at us funny. What's wrong? Well, I'm doing quite well. What is that funny smell? It must be the person next to me. Of course, then we find out it is none other than you yourself. And so we encounter this life, and what we encounter is no other than ourselves. And the universe so generously reflects back whatever we put in front of it. When we come with resentment, the universe perfectly mirrors resentment. When we come with anger, anger is mirrored. When we come with love, love is mirrored. We live in this reciprocal, this mutually dependent and co-creating world. And here together we get a glimpse of this. Such a precious time. And of course, no matter whether you're here for a morning or a day or 21 days. These are just manners of speaking. In this moment, all of us are right here, and everyone listening to this talk is right where you are. No problem, no shortness and no longness in this moment. And so we're exploring this moment. This life in the form of these wonderful koan stories. One of the great legacies, the great gifts of this Zen tradition. And I'd like to read a koan this morning from the Book of Equanimity. This is a collection of koans put together in the 12th century in China, put together by Hongzhe, the very same one who wrote The Field of Boundless Emptiness, which we read earlier. So the Book of Equanimity. And just a parenthetical note that many of us long for equanimity. Many of us come to practice to find some more balanced way to live our life. And the wonderful news is, I suppose, is one that you are here for some reason. Something brings you here this morning. Something calls to you. And as we clarify that that longing, the deepest longing, then that can be useful to us. And for some people, the longing is for peace or equanimity. And so important to realize that equanimity is not a particular content of the mind, but equanimity is being awake to reactivity. The best definition I know of equanimity is not living a life without ups and downs, but being present, being fully present with all of these ups and downs, all of the flavors of our life. So if equanimity is what you long for, the great news is that you can practice equanimity right in this moment with whatever is here, a busy, distracted mind equanimity, resentment. Oh, this is what is here. This is what is here. And the teaching is, as we meet what is here, there is something that happens where we touch and are touched by life itself. And when this happens, as we say, there is no problem. There is no one standing outside. And the koan I'd like to read is Case 21. The title, Yunyan Sweeps the Ground. And there are two characters in this story who were Dharma brothers. Sometimes these stories often about students and teachers, but sometimes about two fellow travelers along the way. And one of the gifts of our Sangha is not just the teachers who get up here and blab on and on, but each other. Our great Dharma friends that we sit next to. Maybe a person next to you, you don't even know their name, but you indeed are Dharma sisters and brothers. We are Dharma sisters and brothers all here. And so this is a story about two Dharma brothers who are playing the Yunyan and Dao Wu. Were their names. They were both students of the great teacher Bai Zhang. So the main case, attention. As Yunyan was sweeping the ground, Dao Wu said, "You're hard at it." Yunyan replied, "You should know there's one who isn't hard at it." Dao Wu said, "So is there a second moon?" Yunyan held up the broom, saying, "Which moon is this?" Attention, as Yunyan was sweeping the ground, Dao Wu said, "You're hard at it." Yunyan replied, "You should know there's one who isn't hard at it." Daowu said, "So is there a second moon?" Yunyan held up the broom, saying, "Which moon is this?" So again, the encouragement is on hearing the koan to hear the koan and to notice what arises in you. This koan is somehow, we might say, just for you. As Melissa said so wonderfully yesterday, we can listen to the Dharma talk as if it were just for us. And when we listen in this way, we begin to receive. And indeed, we can approach our whole life. Actually, I think it was Jack Kornfeld who encouraged his students in the exercise of imagine that everyone else in the whole world is already enlightened, and that everything they do is just to help you become enlightened as well. Quite a wonderful thought experiment, or even real experiment, because usually so much of our mind is judging they shouldn't do that, or that was good, but what if it's not a mistake? And so then whatever arises in you upon hearing this koan, what if it's not a mistake? So maybe confusion or maybe opinions about yourself. Well, this koan stuff isn't for me. I'm not a koan person, or, you know, whatever arises. Or maybe something particularly grabs you, or something particularly disturbs you. All of this we can just allow to be. John Tarrant, who is a teacher in our lineage, once I heard him say that you should not work on koans, but you should let the koan work on itself. And indeed, maybe good advice for our life. All of us confronted with all of these insoluble problems, one after the other. And usually we think somehow we have to figure it out. You know, good to be reflective about our life, but usually our trying to fix it is actually a part of the problem. Is it possible to meet life beyond this judgmental quality? What if things are fine? Not that there's not difficulty, not that there's not things we have to do, but what if it's not a problem that there are problems? This is just how life appears. And so this koan begins with Yunyan sweeping. Yunyan was sweeping the ground. Sweeping is often, well, we might say sweeping is a revered activity in Zen. Usually we distinguish between a high-class activity and low-class activity. But one of the wonderful things about Zen is this appreciation of activity itself. Any judgment we have about the activity is simply a judgment we have about the activity, and that life is simply the activity of life. And this activity of life operates ceaselessly. Lin Shi, in the reading we read this morning, talked about the wondrous function of the Buddhas is right here. It is your wondrous function. So this functioning of life we vow here to participate in every part of life, and here on retreat and of course in our life we can see how some parts of life we say, yes, I like this part, I want more of this part, and other parts we say, I don't like that, I don't like it when people say mean things about me, I don't like it when I don't get what I want. But Zen is encouraging us to enter into life more immediately, more intimately, and that there is an intimate life that is precious beyond measure. Usually we're too busy solving problems and judging, wanting more, wanting less. Even this judging and wanting more and wanting less is just the activity of life. Just this. So Yunyan is sweeping the ground. It's probably what Ray told him to do. It was his job to sweep the ground. So he was giving himself to sweeping. Sweeping is not something that you do once and it's done. Sweeping is every day, and in our practice even, we could say that we are practicing breathing in and breathing out. We are practicing noticing what arises, noticing when we get carried away. A part of practice is wandering away. We think we are, we make the vow, I will be here with my breath, I will be here with whatever's arising, and at some point we wander off on the mind road. This is not a problem, because at some point we naturally wake up. We realize that we have gotten lost in ideas of past and future, and in that moment we have the opportunity to return. And this returning is not something we do once and say, wait, I've done it, but constantly. And in the reading by Hungjer this morning, he says, the field of boundless emptiness is what appears from the very beginning, but you must purify, grind down, brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. You must purify, grind down, cure, and brush away. So although you are already awakened, you already have what you long for, already here in infinite abundance. It does require, being human does require that we turn again and again, that we sweep again and again. Dogen had a wonderful phrase for this. He said, beginningless awakening and endless practice. So practice is not something we do to get something else, and then when we get that something else, we can retire. But practice is what we do because we know something, because we have been touched, because we vow in our heart to turn in the direction of love, to turn in the direction of life, again and again. So, Yunyan was sweeping the ground, and his buddy comes by and says, well, you're hard at it. You're working hard. Another translation of this phrase is his buddy Dao Wu comes by and says, too busy. You're trying too hard. He might be saying, well, Buddha nature is everywhere. Why did you come on this silly sesshin? Why are you following all these rules? Isn't it already here? So some criticism Indeed, one of the central parts of this koan for me is about effort. This wonderful paradox of effort. So if we are already enlightened, why do we have to try so hard? And so if you are trying to get somewhere else, you're heading in the wrong direction. But if you're daydreaming, you're missing an opportunity. So what is this? Should we try hard or not? Should I rouse my energy, or should I just be muddled and confused? And there is no answer. There is no meter that you can strap on that will tell you, but the Buddha's encouragement was, one student asked him, how do we cross the raging river of life? How do we cross through this great delusion of separation? And the Buddha said, by not tarrying and not straining. By not tarrying, not lagging, not going too slow, and by not going too fast. So how do we find this middle way? So Yunyan sweeping and Daowu says, you're hard at it. And Yunyan replied, you should know there's one who isn't hard at it. You should know there's one who is not hard at it, there is one who is not busy. And this is a wonderful invitation. We have an idea of what we are doing, but this teaching is that in the middle of all of this, in the middle of whatever you think you're doing, there is this mysterious function of life. So maybe running a marathon and putting yourself into it, maybe washing the dishes after dinner and tired, and really calling yourself, maybe sitting on the cushion and for the 10,000th time coming back to just this breath. We say, well, I'm working hard. But looking closer, you might ask, who is working hard? All the while, the heart beating, and all the while, the blood circulating, the blood knowing where to go. The blood coming into the lungs and letting go of what it doesn't need and taking oxygen, even for those of us whose lungs are not at 100%, still doing just fine. All of us still breathing in and out, hearts still beating. This vast intelligence of the body that is so much more brilliant than your conscious mind, than my conscious mind. We are functioning in this life that is beyond our comprehension. So I do think important to have a direction, to want to wake up or want to be with your life in some new way, and that our effort and our practice makes a difference, that we do grow in love and understanding, and at the same time there is one who is not working hard at all. There is this life, lifing itself, and we take it personally, and we say, I'm doing well, I'm not doing well, I'm sick, I'm healthy. In fact, all of us 100%, 100% low energy, 100% dog poop on the shoes, 100% is just this, and ideas come and go. I think the Taoist, one of the great streams that fed, mixed with Buddhism and Confucianism to produce Zen, Taoism has a wonderful encouragement that is here in Zen of aligning with life itself, rather than trying to get our way, rather than trying to control the universe. It is possible to move with more and more grace with life itself. And so we are learning to do this. We are practicing moving gracefully in our life. We are practicing being ourselves, being this self that is the one that you can never know. Any idea you have about yourself is already old-fashioned, already out of date, and that we can begin to encounter our life with this curiosity to encounter situations and see how we can align with what is here. Now, aligning with what is here does not mean we always say yes and go along. Sometimes aligning means we're the one who stands up and says no, or I have a different opinion, or we need to do something quickly. But there is this potential of aligning. And with our practice, as we sit now in our second day, in our 100th day, in our 67th year, in our 23rd year, whatever it is, but of letting your life do itself, can you allow the breath to breathe itself? Can you align with what is here, the difficulty, the ease, the coming and going, the confusion, whatever is here? We are practicing allowing it to be. And when we allow life to be, then life blossoms as itself. It cannot do anything else. Yunyan says, you should know there is one who isn't hard at it. Dao Wu says, so is there a second moon? And he's saying, so then you're saying that there's someone who is hard at it and someone who isn't hard at it. So are there two of you? Is there the one who is watching and the one who is doing? There's some spiritual past that emphasize this or maybe appreciate this, the witness. But when you inquire into the one who is watching, is there someone watching, the watcher? Zen has this wonderful way of saying, I'm hard at it, and there's one who isn't hard at it. But to think that there is one who is hard at it and one who isn't hard at it is to get lost. And we can easily get lost in Zen and these fancy words. We can hold tight to emptiness as if it were something. We can hold tight to Buddha, to awakening, as if it was something else. So wonderful brother Dao Wu says, so is there a second moon? Is there some fundamental separation and duality here? And Yun Yan, rather than taking the bait, he said, well, let me explain to you. Let me make it clear. I'll explain to you. There is no explanation. Yun Men said Mount Sumeru. And Yun Yan held up the broom. Yun Yan presented the broom, presented this moment, and said, which moon is this? What is this talk of enlightenment and delusion here in this moment? No need to get lost in philosophical discussions. This is not philosophy we are exploring here, but life itself. So Yunyan sweeps the ground, case 21 from the Book of Equanimity. Attention! As Yunyan was sweeping the ground, Dao Wu said, "You're hard at it." Yunyan replied, "You should know there's one who isn't hard at it." Dao Wu said, "So is there a second moon?" Yunyan held up the broom, saying, "Which moon is this?" Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. I'm raising the guidelines of talking and eye contact. To remind you that we're recording this, so if you'd like to say something off record, we'll happily turn this off and then turn it back on again. But please come forward with your experience, questions about this, about practice, about this enterprise. Yeah.
The first thing I kind of noticed about this that I found really enjoyable about this koan was that they were two guys of the same age, so it kind of felt like they were just busting each other's chops a little bit. Like, so just, you know, kind of juicing it out a little bit. Like,
yeah.
I felt like that made it a little bit more comfortable for the both of them, because I think sometimes with the student-teacher relationship, oftentimes the teacher's the one kind of throwing the punches and the kids just trying to kind of dodge the punches. But I felt like they were both kind of knocking them around a little bit.
Yeah, it's a wonderful expression of that we really do that with each other in many different ways. Appreciating the freedom of this kind of interaction. Yeah.
Great. And there are some koans where the students get the better of the teachers. So what we might talk about some of those during this.
No, we will not read them. And I think, too, one of the challenges for me in the koans is that they often make me feel stupid and like the teacher's trying to bust my chops, right? Like, you know, sometimes it seems like the teacher's actually trying to make life difficult for the student. And that may be true, but it for me, as I've gone deeper into the koans, even the teacher-student thing, there is great love being expressed. Noticing how it shifts back and forth and how, you know, sometimes like, oh, why did he say that? That's like really mean. What if it's not? What if it's incredibly kind and almost shares a humanness that we can feel so easily in here?
Yeah, in fact, Alan talked to us last night about the style of working with koans, which is part of our school, where you get inside every character as if it was you.
Right.
And so when a teacher appears to be acting in a way in a koan that seems mean, like even in the koan Mu, when, you know, the teacher should be kind and say, oh, let me explain to you about what Buddha nature is, but instead he says, no. To get inside that teacher and see, how is this compassionate? How could this be compassionate? Even in the hitting, there's some, you know, because as we said, we don't do that anymore. There is a wonderful practice. Then you become a teacher yourself in that moment when you enter the personality of the teacher and what he or she said. How could this be the most compassionate response? So it flies in the face of, I think, a lot of what we're taught about conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Dave, for that. Not at first, but like partway through, like over halfway through, all of a sudden I imagined that I was at home sweeping as, you know, a house, what do they call that? I don't remember the word. You know, not, I was almost like a housekeeper, but, you know, a homemaker.
Yeah.
You know, and there are teenagers, you know, saying, wow, you're really hard at work. Really. It really, because, you know, I really try to respect their flow and what they're doing and what they need to do, you know. And then there are times that I can't remember the exact line when he held up the broom, but it, like, which moon is this? I don't know. Like, I think we have more moons than this. Which kind of, you know, this moon maybe slightly more surface, but maybe not.
Well, actually, there's a preface and a verse after this, and in the preface, there's something about that this is not about not assigning tasks to do. So just thinking about the teenagers and, well, so I'm sweeping and it's my job to sweep, but maybe sometimes here's the broom, sweetheart. and how to judge, you know, to respect their flow, but also to invite them into this great activity of taking care of the house. Thanks.
You know, your the koan and your talk about this activity of sweeping and cleaning dog poop, I'm reminded of a quote I heard from Shunryu Suzuki, who said, "There are no enlightened people, only enlightened activity." And you can really sink into that one. But there's a beauty and equanimity involved in that. When you remove the you that cleans the poop, they're just cleaning poop.
Yeah.
Well, in a way you could say awakening is the removal of the you, but not the removal of the activity, of the functioning. So everything drops away, but then we don't just dwell there. Which is, what happened to the Buddha. He had this dropping away of everything, and he just wanted to sit around and enjoy it. And people talked him out of it. Oh no, go teach, go do something. So I think that's a very important trap that you're naming, because it's so luscious and tasty, but so is sweeping. Right? So is the activity. And it's not one is better than the other. They become one thing. There are, no, I've only seen one moon in my experience.
When I had young children at one point and wanted to assign tasks such as doing the dishes, and I didn't want it to be a punishment to do the dishes, so it had to be something they enjoyed. And so I enjoyed doing the dishes. And if I assigned it to them as, you know, something they had to do, you know, it sort of took it away. It wasn't something that was enjoyable anymore. So my enjoying doing the dishes and not seeing it as a punishment sort of worked on me to not invite them, not having them see doing the dishes as a punishment, but just as an activity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did not get stuck doing the dishes. It was just another opportunity to do the dishes. And I liked the concept of hydrotherapy. So it was. It's like everything else without assigning a negative thing to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like clean the poop on your shoe. Where's the problem?
Right.
There's none.
Yeah.
You know, it's just clean the poop on your
shoe. Enlightened activity.
Right. So, but it's so easy to see where we choose the activity we want.
Yeah.
I'm worried though, Ray, that when you assign Samo tasks tomorrow. Ray, I hate to take that off.
Did you want to say more about that?
No, that the other side of it is, saying, I really don't want to do the dishes this time, is another kind of gift.
Yeah.
And, enabling your kids to step up to that, which is, hard part of parenting, because we want to be indulgent. And yet, sometimes we need to step back and say, I've done this enough. And then someone else can be the Buddha. Someone else can be Ray.
Yeah. Well, I've been practicing with this myself in daily life, and I think it's very applicable to Sasheen as well. So I don't know about you, but I start the day with a list of things to do. I've been looking through the list, and some of them just make my stomach turn. And we feel like, oh God, I just don't want to do it. But if I don't do it, it won't get done, or it'll be late. But then there are a couple of things that spring out of the list that are like, they have light in them. They're like colorful and pretty and wonderful. This is not a technique. This is a practice, because I have to actually sit and let the joy arise. What I found is if I head towards the joy first, some of those onerous tasks start, it's like a contagion. And they become joy-filled. I don't like to do the dishes because my hands get all dry. But I know there are people who love to do the dishes. So one of the things here at Sasheen is that if we can find the joyous task during Samu, or the joyous task of sitting and walking, or the joyous task of eating and cooking, then the Sangha, you don't have to be responsible for loving everything. You can let other people love things for you, and that's contagious. So the person who really loves sweeping, it's going to influence other people. The person who just, oh God, they assigned me sweeping, shit. I hate sweeping. That's also going to be contagious. So one of the arts of being the Sangha leader is matching people to their joy. And if you haven't been matched well in that sense, then you get to practice with that. So basically it's win-win-win-win. Right. Or you could take it as lose-lose-lose-lose and practice with that for a while. Life sucks. And I have to sweep the floor. Damn it.
Well, I think this is what Alan said in the, so lovely to do the things that give us joy. And I think that what we're practicing here is finding, meeting the aliveness in whatever we're doing. As you're saying, so there, the aliveness in sweeping, maybe I really don't like sleeping. Sweeping. That's what I've been doing. But rather than picking and choosing, although lovely to notice, and sometimes we do get to choose, but I think it's part of the gift of, when Esther rings the bell through the house, you better get down here. And if you're on retreat, it doesn't matter whether you want to be here or not. And there's some gift in that, beyond, I'm a little sore, but all right, this is how it is, and I'm going to show up as I can.
And I think I'm saying something that's the other side of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, because, to hate the sound of Esther's bell. it's not actually about you, Esther. it's to feel the hatred. And we do have little choices, even if we're staying overnight at Sasheen and we're retreatants. The wonderful thing about coming and going is you actually do get to choose. I don't want to come here today. But I don't know, those of you who are here, from who aren't staying overnight, you chose this, and there's all that little deliberation. But maybe not. Maybe there's a point that we get to where we stop picking and choosing, and we just do it. Just, it's 10:00. I want to hear Dharma talk. Here we come.
I'm just thinking of complaining, for example.
Yes.
I, I'm getting better at not complaining, but the whole culture complains all the time. You know, the politics, the leadership, it's always complaining about this, they'll complain about the weather, complain about the, you know, this, complain about the car, complain. It's just so, it infects at least me, and it's hard to just meet a situation without complaining about it, that I don't like my boss, my coworkers, my clients, know, it's so pervasive, and so, and it dissipates the energy that is there for possible transformation with the dislike.
Right. Yeah.
There's a koan that maybe one of us will talk about sometime over the next 3 weeks, which is. You know, I'm not talking about before awakening, I'm not talking about after awakening. It's actually Yin Men, who we talked about yesterday. You know, what's the deal after awakening? And the response, nobody answers, which is an experience that Zen teachers sometimes have. And so he answers for himself, and he says, every day is a good day. Like, what? No, I don't think so. I don't feel good, I have a headache. I'm tired. How is that a good day? Some of us have been practicing from another, it's not a koan, but a story where the teacher's advice is to say the words over and over again to everything that arises. Thank you very much. I have no complaint whatsoever. I gave a talk about that a few weeks ago. And what? No, the brain is hardwired. It's not just modern American culture. The brain is hardwired to complain. To have preferences. So we're doing something really subversive here to the mind that complains. And, just to turn it over, we're also embracing the mind that complains. Like, wow, there's life and energy there, as David was saying, about the tasks we don't like. So both and is then. Yeah.
So let's sit for another few breaths and move on to walking, whether you want to or not.